You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is
Pod Yourself a Gun.
A Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos
and talk about it. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much once again for listening to the world's only Sopranos podcast. Give us 5 stars and a review on the Apple iTunes store, the podcast app, and also on Spotify. You can do that. Just give stars. They don't allow reviews, but stars would be nice because Vince loves it. That's mm-hmm. why I mention it before every episode. Just real quick, I just want to shout out some of our top people who on Patreon who just have been crushing it. First of all, Kenley Bidwell with the $300. He kept it going even between seasons. He kept it going. He just actually made it $8 again. That's kind of fucked up. But I just want to say, Kenley, you got a big dick, very veiny, and it pleases all women. Isn't that right, Vince?
Mm-hmm. That's what I've heard.
You know, I feel like I get no support when I'm trying to. These people are giving their life savings. And then, of course, our $100 patron, Jason, still here, still going strong. Big, fat dick, amazing balls, nice face, probably. And just a final shout out to Charlie Penner, who has been a $100 donor for years on the Frogcast. And I just feel like at this point, I really do owe him sexual favors, because I don't know if he's dead. He could be dead and just is continuing. Well, they're charging his account still.
This is a worthy legacy for him.
Yeah,
as being a patron, he's the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur of Pod Yourself Again. And for that,
yeah, he really is.
We thank you.
I mean, if he's dead, like, what happens when you die? Do your all your
that's a different podcast.
No, this is the same podcast. Like, when you die, do your like all your subscriptions, like Hulu, mm-hmm. OnlyFans, Patreon, do they stop?
No, you take them with you. Well, the ancient Egyptians believe like they would actually put the podcast in the tomb.
Yeah, they would put it in your tomb.
It was actually just a servant holding a boombox with your favorite podcast on it.
With all of your favorite content. Oh man, just a bunch of naked anime chicks. That's my favorite Patreon.
Bury me with my waifu.
I was doing some quick math recently, and I realized that if every one of our patrons, which is, I'm rounding up to, it's 900. If every one of our patrons gave us $1,000, that would give us $900,000.
That's really good math. I'm glad you did that.
So I'd like everyone to think about that. It would only cost you... Food for thought. It would only cost you $1,000 to make me and Vince a collective almost millionaire. So,
sure. Yeah, important.
Anyways, let's get into the episode or the beginning of it. It's been a while since we potted. Today, we are going to be talking about from season 6B, episode 1, Soprano Home Movies. And our guest today, he is a fantastic podcaster. You have heard his sultry sweet voice on the amazing history podcast Blowback, where he is the co-host with the previous guest, Brendan James. Ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, welcome Noah Colwin to the pod.
How you doing?
Doing good.
Right, damn, I had like, I guess I had something in my throat there for a second, but I am doing good, and yeah. I'm glad that you guys are doing well.
Yeah, that sultry sweet voice came in like Bane.
I thought you were doing a Batman thing there.
Yeah. It's actually, this is my Elizabeth Holmes voice, and actually, this is my my speech. Yeah.
I feel like I just started watching that show. What is it called? The One Drop Rule. Oh yeah, that's it. Well, that's it. It's not the One Drop Rule.
Show. That one's on the Daily Wire.
Yeah. All right. I'm editing all that out. I've been watching that Elizabeth Holmes show and realizing that the voice that she does on that show, first of all, Amanda Siegfried, she's crushing it.
Siegfried, isn't it?
Is it Siegfried?
Yeah.
Siegfried. Yeah, I think it's Siegfried and Roy, and it's Amanda Siegfried.
Yeah, Amanda Siegfried.
Oh, shit. All right. I mean, Amanda Siegfried, gorgeous also, by the way, but that's not the point. The point is that she's doing a great job with the voice. I used to do that exact fake low voice in middle school, and so I kind of, I don't know, I feel...
How'd it work out for
I
you?
Feel, I didn't get laid, if that was what you're asking. But
I like that the premise of that show, because they keep doing the thing where they make a show about a news story that I just finished reading like 5 minutes ago or listen to a podcast about. Mm-hmm. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Podcasts are great.
Yeah, podcasts are great. But I like that they made the premise of that show that she should have stayed in college so that she could have been obnoxious, like without having... I feel like that's the reason why you should go to college, is not to like get a good job or to like learn stuff.
Right.
It's so that you get all the obnoxious personality twists out of the way before you have like employees or like a duty.
I'm going to be honest. That's not what happens at Stanford, that you just get more and more.
Oh, really? Okay.
It is a fundamentally deforming experience, I'm sure.
They do kind of act like her dropping out. They're like, but what about the certificates? That's why you're coming here, is to get the certificate that allows you to be this ridiculous. But instead,
I haven't seen the show. Although it is kind of funny, because it's like you don't need any, you know, like what's the greatest certificate of all? Clout. Her case, she acquired a lot of it, or rather she knew a lot of people. And so, you know, she got these boards and professors to co-sign it or whatever. A lot gets made. And, you know, like I covered Elizabeth Holmes. I'm actually in a story I wrote is in the index of the Kariru book and Bad Blood. And it is, it would be really crazy for me to see a show try and make the argument that it's like, well, you know what? Had she just stayed at Stanford for another year or two, that would be a bit of a reach. But I don't know, maybe I'll watch it. I know that there's also another one coming down the pike.
You should watch it. They've made Sonny Balwani seem shockingly
kind of hot.
No, they have to. I mean,
they made him relatable compared to reality.
Yeah, there's no like this is one of those things where it's like why reality is much more important than fiction, because it's so much fucking weirder.
Much uglier. Yeah,
exactly. Is that like one all uggos like in Hollywood? They're all tens, even the ugly people.
Yeah.
So you know, like. Yeah, I think that that's actually a really good standard in general. Like, look up the, like, every single one of these tabloid things or whatever that they're making into stuff. Like, look up the real people.
Yeah.
They're hilariously ugly.
Yeah, like, special.
Unless they're working class, in which case I take back what I said, and they're all beautiful, chiseled.
Exactly. 100%. Speaking of working class heroes, The Sopranos.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great show, and that's what this podcast is about. So, I have to ask you, Noah Colwin, do you like The Sopranos?
I love it. It's close to home, literally. I am from Montclair, New Jersey, where a lot of the show is shot, including scenes from this episode.
Nice. All right. Like, what are you like, the near Pizza Land?
Not quite. So Montclair is
near the pork store.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, so the pork store is in Belleville, which is it's also in Essex County, just a bit south. Montclair is next to I grew up pretty close to and grew up going to Holston's as a kid.
Yeah. That's the diner.
The diner. And then in this episode, the interior of a bar near the Canadian border is in reality the interior of Tierney's Bar on Valley Road in Montclair, which of which I am a happy and frequent patron when I am home.
Nice. Look at that. You got some like inside knowledge into this very particular episode.
Local color.
Season, there's an exterior. I forget which episode. There's an exterior shot of AJ picking up a girlfriend in front of a high school.
Yeah.
And that high school was my high school.
Nice. Yeah. So as someone who grew up in New Jersey, are you like in the mafia?
No, I'm Jewish. So,
So, are you a lawyer for the mafia?
No, and I'm not a doctor. I just settled for podcaster.
That's fair.
But no, I mean it's the milieu, like the Meadow Soprano experience is eerily familiar. but I don't want to overemphasize that because I think that part of what makes the show so special and amazing is that this thing that is literally shot where I grew up is has this beyond universal value, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Yeah. Do you have any character in particular that you feel you like the best or one that you relate to? I never said this interview was going to be good, guys.
No, it's a good, it's a fair question. I guess I'm just going to say Tony.
Hell yeah.
Cause I also take, he takes Zoloft, right?
Is it Zoloft or is
I know
it,
he I, says Prozac, but when you look at the pill bottle, is it Zoloft or Prozac?
I think it might actually be AJ who ends up taking Zoloft.
Okay, well, I mean, I'm going to be honest, never really identified with AJ, although I very much sympathized with him.
Sure.
Nah, Tony is who I, it's a basic answer, because, we see inside his head the most, but I think that, when you set aside the fact that he is a violent psychopath who can never let anybody close to him because of a Hitchcock-like issue with mommy, and violent daddy. There's this sort of the everyman thing about him it really gets in me. I'm like, hey, that's me, that's me up there. I know that guy. I've been on that couch,
I've also driven home, looking forward to lo mein and then found that someone had eaten it and started yelling.
Listen, man, and then, all right, now here's where I can take it to the next level, where it's I have been, driving with the windows down singing Steely Dan on Bloomfield Avenue. when I saw this at a younger and more impressionable age, you can imagine that I became very annoying about something like that.
Oh, sure. You also do not want to do your dirty work no more.
No.
But this is not a Steely Dan podcast. No, this is a Sopranos podcast.
Good segue. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I did my best. And we, of course, cannot start the pod without first playing the theme song. Pod. 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 Podcast. Pod. Pod. Pod.
Podcast.
All right, ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, today we are going to be talking about, once again, from Season 6B, Episode 1, Soprano Home Movies, which premiered April 8th, 2007. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
Sure can. Carmela and Tony go away to Bobby's cabin upstate. I think it should be in upstate New York, but they forgot that word. In upstate New York for Tony's birthday, up where a fight. What the fuck? What is wrong with the synopsis?
Where does, sorry, what website is this from?
This is IMDb.
IMDb, not like IMDb, like Kazakhstan or something. Yeah.
Where a fight emerges between Tony and Bobby over Janice. Meanwhile, AJ is throwing a party at the Soprano home.
Makes it sound like they're fighting over who gets to fuck her.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. That is, that's got to be an award.
Sorry, you were saying meanwhile.
AJ is throwing a party at the Soprano home.
Yeah.
Classic.
Yeah, but that's
sitcom. Oh yeah, big storyline.
Big storyline. Huge. It was half the episode. So Vince, what was happening at the time that this episode came out?
That's right, Matt. We cannot evaluate content without its cultural context and blah 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 blah. And for that, we go to the Remember When machine.
Walk, walk.
Remember when it's the lowest form of conversation.
That's right. We're going all the way back to April 8th, 2007. A lot of things going on. It was the last day of the Masters, won by Zach Johnson, which I know you guys are very excited about.
Thanks for putting that in there. Uh-huh, Now I know what was happening at the time.
We got a story from the New York Times. I hope this doesn't go badly. Housing slump pinches states in pocketbook. State revenues around the country are growing far more slowly this year and in some cases falling below projections, a result of the housing market slowdown that has curbed voracious spending on real estate, building materials, furniture, and other items. Nowhere is the downturn more apparent than in Florida, where tax revenue is projected to drop this year for the first time since the energy crisis of the 1970s. Yeah, I hope nothing bad happens there.
Yeah, I hope so, man. I have a feeling that it'll be fine and that, everyone's going to pay their mortgage and housing bubble's just going to keep getting bigger.
The economy will continue to boom.
Uh-huh. The fundamentals are strong.
Mm-hmm. Elsewhere, Pope Benedict the 16th, he's the Pope, and it was Easter, so he had to give his state of the Easter sermon that he does every year.
Is Pope Benedict the one who's not Pope anymore?
He's the angry German one.
Yeah.
He was the one. Didn't you watch the two popes?
I did, but I don't remember the names of the. I remember Ratzinger. I remember that being his name. I don't remember his fake made up name.
There was a bad Nazi Pope, and then there was like a good South American.
Soccer Pope.
Yeah, soccer Pope.
Soccer Pope versus Nazi Pope. Who's gonna win?
Yeah, he saw the writing on the wall, and he was like, you know what? I'm gonna let this guy be Pope, and that was a pretty cool move of him.
What if he had just stayed, though? Like, what are they going to do?
What if?
You know?
Yeah.
He's just like, yeah, I fucked those kids. Was it him who fucked the kids? It wasn't him, right?
No, not.
He was just with
me. Not personally, that I know of.
Okay.
Yeah. He's moving them around like chess pieces. Pope Benedict the 16th said, nothing positive comes from Iraq. Pope Benedict decried suffering in much of the world in his Easter Sunday message, lamenting that, quote, nothing positive is happening in Iraq, and voicing worries over unrest and instability in Afghanistan and bloodshed in parts of Africa and Asia.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. He's right.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Nazi Pope was right. That shit's bad over there.
Yeah. Yeah. The Middle East. What's going on with that? elsewhere, you know, The Sopranos was actually like the news at this point, because we're all the way into the last season, the last sub season. So the New York Post is writing about the end of The Sopranos in an article called Family Reunion. It feels like a death, says Edie Falco, the 3-time Emmy winner who went from relative obscurity to being the heart and soul of The Sopranos. She is talking about the end of the landmark TV series that changed the course of her life and those of her fellow cast members on the HBO mob drama.
Yeah.
Now that her
and
TV
changed the course of human history.
Changed
everything.
Our lives, certainly.
Our lives completely.
We wouldn't be in the New York Times without The Sopranos.
Exactly. If it wasn't for The Sopranos, we never would have been on a variety listicle with a bunch of other podcasts
right.
that probably don't exist.
Now that her TV family is saying goodbye forever, Falco, 44, is a wreck. I don't know what
Jesus.
I don't know what kind of crazy person chooses this as their life, where you meet people and become intensely attached to them and then say, "See ya," she says. You say, "We'll keep in touch, but I know, I'm not a kid. I know that that takes a certain kind of effort that people don't really make. Anyway, it's a very crazy, crazy thing to think about, that I won't be seeing these people. It's awful."
I mean, yeah, but you could call, though. That's,
I mean,
I also
she
agree.
Know,
it's like,
I mean, this is before podcasts. Like, she doesn't realize that they could just do a podcast about it and then just, talk about it every week with all their Sopranos friends.
The party never has to end. You just podcast.
I'm pretty sure that is why, who is it that does the podcast? Moltisanti and
Bobby Bacala.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why they were like, fuck it. Why does the party have to end just because the show ended? Let's keep this going.
Somebody,
but
put
of course,
it,
that podcast does not actually exist, as we have told our listeners before. There is only one, and it is this one. The other one, it's a front.
Jamie Lynn Sigler, who was just 16 when she filmed The Sopranos pilot, was trying to keep things in perspective. Somebody put it to me perfectly the other day. They said all good things come to an end, but it's rare to be part of anything great. I don't plan to try to compare anything to The Sopranos. I won't do it. There's such a sense of camaraderie among the cast. It spoiled me a little bit, says Sigler, now 25. Sigler battled eating disorders early on in the show's run and married, then divorced, her former manager, AJ DeScala. The support she felt from her cast, from the cast, saw the actress through those hard times.
She married an AJ?
Yeah.
Weird, dude, because that's the name of the TV brother, if you think about it. Yeah. Damn. Well, the good thing about a good portion of the Sopranos castmates is they have all gone into podcasting. And good for them for doing it. You know, the party never ended. And it sucks, though, if you think about it, because like I'm reading this article and I'm thinking, dude, that's kind of like us, man. This is our last season of this Sopranos rewatch podcast.
Yeah, we're never going to get together on Zoom anymore.
No, we're never going to be able to get together on Zoom. It's like it feels like a death to me as well. I feel like we got 9 episodes left and then we die. Or we start watching The Wire or something.
We'll figure it out.
We'll figure that out, yeah.
Well, what else is going on? That's been... Oh, okay. Sorry, I forgot about the movies. There was movies in 2007. Namely, the top movies in the country were Blades of Glory, Meet the Robinsons, Are We Done Yet, Grindhouse, and The Reaping.
All right.
Could be worse, honestly.
Yeah.
Those are, like I'm just going to say it, you know?
I mean, I was actually surprised that this was the debut weekend of Grindhouse, and it's in fourth place behind Ice Cube in the sequel to Are We There Yet? Which
We There Yet was a big. I remember the commercials for that like incessantly.
That was when it was still a novelty that Ice Cube wasn't scary anymore.
Yeah, no, he is now.
Kind of the whole point because he was scary to the kids, right?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he
like,
did. The, he did
like
the angry
they did the
face.
Same thing with The Rock.
Yeah, well, The Rock was always, you know, even now he still scares me. That
I know a lot
too,
of I know a lot
big.
Of people are scared because he plays a DEA agent and because he was a wrestler. But to me, he's scary because he was a football player at the U.
Top pop song in the country was "Don't Matter" by Akon.
Oh, that's a great one.
The top rock song, I don't remember the song at all, is "Breath" by Breaking Benjamin.
What the fuck is Breath?
I remember Breaking Benjamin. I do not remember that song.
I don't remember either.
It's a really
of those
bad.
Things.
I listen to it. It's like it like splits the difference between like Stained and Three Doors Down.
It splits the difference between.
Yeah, yeah it does.
What is the difference?
Well, I mean, one's a morose song about Superman, and then the other one's a sad song about
Your dad.
Yeah, about your dad.
All right. So that's the Remember When machine. That's what was going on at the time. Now that we've gotten all that out of the way, it is time for the Bada B story this week, in which I do a parody song synopsis because, I don't know, because I keep doing it.
That's your role now.
I guess so. And, you know, I'm not going to lie to you. This one sucks, but it's only like 50 seconds long. And it's called America's Sopraniest Home Videos.
Okay.
Let's do it. Tony drops his gun in the snow 2 years ago. He spends one whole night in jail. His bullets are hello. It's season 6, part 2. Final season, Bob Fungo. The mafia, eats gabagoo. There's another verse. Tony drives to the lake house, meets Bobby B. They get drunk and start to fight, playing Monopoly. Carmen and Janice also fight. Bobby finally kills a guy. The mafia, eats gabagool. Yeah! What's up?
All right.
You can hear the rest of that song at the very end of the episode, as per usual. But yeah, that's basically what's going on in this episode. It's mostly an episode about Tony Soprano feeling his mortality and taking a vacation in a lake house near the Canadian border. And, you know, there's, you know, like the synopsis, the IMDb synopsis said there's also a very small B story in which AJ throws a party that you don't see. Mostly it's just AJ's B story is he gets to fuck in his parents' bed, which.
And he has
his girlfriend is still Blanca.
Still Blanca, yeah.
And he has a chin strap now. I thought I liked the like smash cut to AJ with a chin strap.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's, I mean, it, you know, this is, I will say off the bat, like one of my, like probably my like top two or three episodes in the whole series. I think it's just like, it's sublime.
Yeah, David Chase co-wrote this episode and, you know, for all his tics, boy, that guy could do Italian dysfunction because I like this one. It starts out like it's going to be about like the workings of the mafia, and it sort of is about that, but it's mostly about just Italian dysfunction and just like the petty arguments that start amongst family that lead to years of weird interactions. And I really felt that. I really identified with that whole thing, and I thought they did wonderfully.
I also think that it did, like, one of the really neat things about The Sopranos when I rewatched this episode that I thought is that they always find really interesting things to happen to people. And in this case, they create, like, they fuse a lot of the mafia tensions and mob storylines, you know, sort of stuff like, you know, the fact that Bobby's dad was, you know, the Terminator or whatever.
Right,
And that he's never killed anybody. And then in this episode, Tony, having lost in the physical battle with Bobby, is then, you know, like, chooses to exert his, you know, power as manager to make Bobby do this thing. And, you know, it's like this kind of like, you know, it's like this, you know, fairly like, you know, basic like test of manhood or whatever. And it also kind of to me, like, you know, side by side with, again, you know, as you said, Matt, like this sense of mortality that Tony is wrestling with. You know, it's not just him, too. You know, it's like a lot of different people are, because the other thing that makes you consider mortality so much is, you know, the title of the show of this episode, which is you know, home movies and youth and kid and all of the accumulated little life experiences they have. And it seems like nobody's really able to handle all that stuff when situated against like this crazy, horrifying, totally empty, like material needing, like violence, blood soaked, blah, 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 life they lead, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and also it's about how Monopoly is really, truly the worst board game to play with a family that's ever been invented. Every Monopoly game, at least in my family, has ended in a fight. I don't know too many people who have finished a Monopoly game.
Right. I still don't even, I'm not even entirely clear on how the game is supposed to end. Like, is it just ends when everybody goes bankrupt except for one person?
Yeah, it's sort of a last man standing principle. I mean, it is like, I've grown up with and played, and definitely in high school and band class, I played Monopoly on my phone. I'm not remembering. But
nice.
The thing about it is that, like, it's, you know, if somebody abides by the rules and, you know, you follow it, then it's, like, you know, kind of interesting, like, luck game or whatever. But the thing is that it's, like, house rules, et cetera, like, literally the thing that they argue about, it's just about, like, you know, I mean, it, you know.
The free parking rule.
Exactly. It's just, like, you know, it's argument fodder.
Yeah. Like. And it's kind of like interesting, like as like them doing a little bit of an art, you know what I mean? Like symbolically, you have these mafiosos sitting together playing this game, and it's a game that's literally about capitalism, destroying your opponent
and your family.
And your family. And cheating in order to get there is just built into the game. And that's something I remember when I used to play Monopoly as a kid. I went over to a friend's house, and I think, yeah, my friend just started taking money from the bank. And literally, I called him out on it, and his father said, cheating is part of the game. And I was like, I don't think that's true. And so I kind of fall on the Bobby Bacala scale.
You're Jewish. I feel like you should understand this.
Oh, I get that. But my problem was, I was like, listen, bro, we're playing a game where we all decided on the ground rules here, and stealing money directly from the bank. Not for me.
You're familiar with the other part of the Jewish tradition here, which is being a sore loser.
That's right. Yeah, and being just ridiculously self-righteous in you know, in the company of others.
The food was terrible.
Yeah.
And not enough of it.
But the free parking rule, I think, is you know, one of my favorite scenes, and I have a clip of that.
What are you doing? It goes in the bank.
We play the free parking rule.
What free parking rule?
Money from community chest and chance goes into the middle. Whoever lands on free parking gets the money.
You show me that in the rules.
Technically, it isn't in the rules, but a lot of people play it that way. It adds a whole new level of excitement to the game.
I don't agree with
it. Bobby, when we were growing up in our house, this is how we played.
You know, the Parker brothers took time to think this all out.
I really love the idea that Bobby thinks that the Parker brothers are just these two guys who were sitting around thinking of the Monopoly rules, and not a like toy company that bought a game from someone who probably didn't see a dime, which is probably the best part of the Monopoly.
I mean,
story.
It adds to his character. He's into toy trains. It makes a lot of sense that he would be a stickler for the Monopoly rules.
Well, I mean, and also to me, again, it's like the thing that's like, you know, the climax for Bobby in this episode is, you know, like, you know, he's got to pot himself a gun and go kill somebody, pop his cherry. And he, you know, I think there's like this kind of like tension of Bobby is the rule follower and Tony is the rule decider.
Right.
You know, there's a number of dynamics, you know, that you could do here. There's the Natalie Beach, Caroline Calloway, you know, various NXIVM victims and Keith Raniere. You know, I think it functions kind of similar. You know, it's a fundamentally like exploitative relationship.
Sure.
And you know, like I don't need to say too much more about how it ultimately resolves. I don't know. How do you guys deal with the future of the show in this episode?
Well, I mean, just in terms of how it resolves, it's interesting because this is the first episode in which you see that Chris is now not being considered to be the second in command anymore, or at least the future of, you know, the Sopranos family. And it's like supposed to go to Bobby, which is like a fucking huge revelation that kind of in my mind kind of flew under the radar. I didn't notice that till I rewatched the episode.
Well, it's like they sort of soft pedal. They don't remind you why Chris was being passed over. They kind of hint that he didn't come see Tony.
Yeah, he didn't. Yeah, he called him for his birthday.
I also think that like the one of the like really like The Sopranos is very good in this season, I think, of like not really requiring the viewer to have a ton of accumulated past knowledge. Like, obviously, it pays off in like the fucking dream sequences and shit. But I do think that this is a moment though where it's like, yeah, if you've seen 5.5 like seasons of the show up until now, then you've seen like. You've seen Christopher, and if you don't, I mean, if you don't have the conclusion that Christopher Moltisanti after that is like not a guy who should be trusted with like, you know, like car keys, let alone like being like the future of like a criminal organization, then like, I don't know what to tell you. So I think to me, like part of what is, you know, like it's part of why, like I really, you know, again, it's like, you know, the, you know, it's kind of funny because like Janice is sort of like an object in this episode. She's like a point of like, she's like, she's not like, this isn't the most interesting Janice episode. This isn't the most interesting Carmela episode, although they have moments, of course. But like the thing that's, you know, sort of interesting to me is like this, you know, where Bobby is like basically put and like set on this like whole fucking like challenge to, you know, like it's just sort of like the focus is entirely on him, and because, you know, Christopher's a fuck up, you can kind of afford to do that. I did not watch this when it came out. I watched it like, I just mainlined it, so I didn't experience the break. So to me, I think it actually felt probably pretty natural, even without having like a immediate previous event to think about.
Yeah, but I think what kind of the reason why I'm like, this is a bigger deal, it's not so much kind of the sidelining of Chris, but like Bobby, you know, we just got done with, you know, the, in the previous season, Tony basically admitting to Melfi that he loves a chance to take a shit on Bobby. Like his favorite thing is like shitting on his sister and shitting on Bobby. And so for me, I was just like, I felt like part of the decision to like maybe, you know, bump Bobby up was because he felt like, well, technically Bobby is family, and also, you know, maybe he just felt like, I don't know, he invited me out to the fucking lake, and isn't that nice? Meanwhile, my fucking nephew called me late to wish me a happy birthday. Like, like part of me felt like it was a little bit petty. It was more a more petty thing.
Well, sure, it's totally petty, but also he doesn't have a ton of options for underlings, number one.
And you know, like Bobby was like, he's super pliant, like that's the thing, like what, like, you know, he's able to be dominated. Like he was Junior's guy for you know, all those years, and like the first time that we're introduced to him, he was wearing a fat the actor was, you know, he's wearing a fat suit, and you know, it's all like he's totally diminutive. And I think you're right, but I also think that like this, I think it's kind of telling, though, that you said that, you know, it's like he likes to shit on Bobby and Janice, and, you know, he loves Janice, and he also loves Bobby. And that's, like, part of what makes, like, you know, I mean, it's why The Sopranos are more interesting than A Normal Family, right, and why they're TV, because it's interesting that these people, like, you know, like, they...
They express, you know, like, love through
exactly,
violence and
hate. Like, they express love through, like, you know, having a weekend at the lake. And then also by making somebody kill somebody and then beating up their husband in front of them, who is also the guy you need to dispatch as a hitman.
Well, it's also, it's sort of like the overbearing father dilemma. It's like, do you promote the kid who maybe reminds you of yourself in that they are full of piss and vinegar a little bit? Or do you promote the one who you're sort of like, Bobby is sort of the, he's the reliable one. Like, like Tony doesn't really respect him as sort of like an independent personality, like as an independent actor. You know,
I think this episode sets up the question of, you know, what if he does now?
Yeah.
Because one, Bobby beat the shit out of him. And two, he goes through with the hit.
Yeah.
And so to me, that's like a really kind of like, you know, this is like, to, you know, if anything, you know, to your point, this is the Bobby Bacala coming out party as, you know, one of the most, like, you know, he is previously an important character, but now he's like, you know, he is Brain Trust. He's like season one, Polly, Syl, Chris, et cetera, territory. Yeah.
I mean, if this was a Western, he would be the one that dad made stay back and take care of the house while the posse went out to do, you know, posse type shit. And so this episode's very much like, okay, you're going to be invited to on the raid the next time. In fact, you got to prove that you belong on this next raid.
Yeah, by killing a French Canadian.
and that was really a crime.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that. I mean, just what it says about the mafia, that like this entire murder takes place so that they can get like a better deal on bootleg prescriptions in order
for osteoporosis.
I also want to be clear that like at no point have any of us like questioned, like, yes, that there's like some psychodrama, like about like, you know, like does Tony actually have to like go through with the hit? But right. Then it's like, we all know that like they are both really greedy and that like he and Bobby, you know, like they don't want to do it, but like, you know,
well, come on, that's like but a couple dollars a package of osteoporosis pills.
Exactly. You know, it's like that's like
they're
going to
save 10 grand on expired osteoporosis.
You know how many wives spec houses you can fund with that difference?
I do think also, though, this is a good moment to bring up something that I hadn't thought about until you did your, you know, what was in the news bit, which is that when this stuff was in production and when they were writing the episode for this, I think one of the really sort of big headline items in it, you know, not just the Iraq War, but specifically this was the period of the most brutal insurgency. The country was functionally in civil war.
Right.
And it was, I think, an extremely cynical time in American politics in terms of like, you know, the practice of politics. Like people just, you know, like the, you know, the Democrats had just in the 06 midterms, they come in and crush. There was a lot of dissatisfaction with the status quo. And I think that the, you know, one of the things of, you know, the callousness that I think was sort of in the air in that moment is something that sort of feels like it's one of the really big vibes in this, like this kind of, you know, this is an episode that reminds you of, you know, how violent these people are and how much, you know, how much they care about finding a buck or whatever, you know, like how you know, sort of like this like desperate violence or whatever that feels like it's characterizing that very, you know, precarious moment as, you know, the financial cracks are beginning to show. And then I think that there's also this, you know, like we see this retreat inward in the end. And, you know, this ultimately this, you know, sort of, you know, like Tony has like this kind of narcotic experience watching the home movies that his sisters made for him.
Right.
And he's just retreating into the past, just totally disengaging and oblivious.
Yeah.
And I think that that kind of obliviousness to ruin is something that, you know, even as he's contemplating his mortality, contrast weighs with me when I watch this one.
Yeah, there's like we talked about this last season in the episode, you know, where they're trying to shake down a Starbucks and realizing that you know, they can't do it. So it's sort of this double-edged this is what we have to do to keep the machine running, which is, you know, kill a random French Canadian to make sure you make a few more dollars on your pills. And then simultaneously with when the machine is running, you're like, wow, this is the reward for this,
right?
Like to keep this thing on track. This is what we get out of it is, you know, you're a couple shitty houses, and your cute little, your hobby boat that you get to take out on the lake in upstate New York. And it's a very adorable hobby boat, by the way.
And the custom-made military assault rifle that you get as a gift. I mean, and that to me is the other thing that is like, there's, it's funny. I was, I pulled up the Wikipedia before doing this stint today because I watched the episode last week when we originally scheduled it before I mucked everything up. And we were, and so then I, you know, rested to be like, all right, is there anything I missed or whatever? And one thing I did miss that they mentioned in the Wikipedia notes is that, like, evidently in the background, you know, there's some body count thing. And I think that, like, this is as close to, like, you know, this is, like, it's part of why this episode rocks so much is that, like, it's got so much in it. Because in addition to this very tender home thing, in addition to this brutal mafia hit, you also have just like the most straight up identification that I think we're ever going to get with, like, you know, with Tony and his ilk holding guns and looking, you know, as a visage not all that dissimilar from like the Americans committing atrocities overseas at that same time. And you know, it's, I don't think it's particularly on the nose. I don't think it's particularly aggressive. I don't necessarily think that that's like the main thrust of any of this, but like, it does feel like very suggestive. And, you know, if part of what makes The Sopranos such an exciting, you know, text to read is the way in which it like does reflect its moment and absorbs it and refracts it in such a, you know, emits it in such a fun way. To me, that's just one of the things that like really, really stuck out.
Yeah, it's, yeah. I mean, the mafia is, most of the works about it are sort of as this sort of parody of American Empire, like in miniature, and it always works that way well. And it's also, we've talked about this before on past episodes, that, you know, the main conflict of the show is them all trying to exist in 2007 and have those and be able to have the sort of social values that make them able to exist in that world while also trying to maintain the weird like social code of the mafia, which is like this very much older thing and a much older code of conduct that they they can't really question it, but it's constantly bumping up against the 2007 version of their life.
I mean, to me though, part of what makes, you know, this is actually, to me, like, yes, there is like a 2007 specific version of this, but I do think that there is a way in which it's like, you know, that you can still, even from that sort of analysis, extract like a very interesting kind of universal story, which is about what happens when you have power. And the purpose of that power, or the way in which it's deployed, is to protect the way in which you leech from society to enrich yourself and are in denial about it.
Right.
And if there's another group of people about whom you can say that that's the case, it's, you know, it's the, well, it's the hybrid Jewish reptilians who live in caves under the it's the wealthy, it's the ruling class, etc. And so there's, to me, this kind of, you know, like,
it's whoever's controlling the weather in the Hollow Moon.
Exactly.
Whatever,
you know,
religion they may be.
I prefer the hybrid Jewish reptilian theory, the works of David Icke. No, I'm kidding. please don't. No,
as you're imagining someone about to cancel you.
No, it's like, see, here's the thing. I don't know what's worse, somebody canceling me or actually, like, what if I accidentally, like, you know, it's like the one guy who listens to this and is like, oh, what's this? And then like 6 months later, it's like he's really into it. And it's like, fuck. Like, god damn it. Like,
you're trying to tell them to stop. Like, stop Googling him. Stop Googling.
Put it down.
I mean, if one country is going to be the Tony Soprano, another country's got to be the French-Canadian bassist who, you know.
Drummer. Isn't he a drummer?
No, I thought he was a bassist.
Oh, well, he's a musician is the point.
Okay, yeah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Speaking of which, I have a theory. That guy, is that Harpo? Is that Janice's son?
I don't know. Why would you? What? Where did that theory come from?
Because Janice married a French Canadian.
Okay.
And then had a baby named Harpo, mm-hmm. who she left, and
there's
he,
no way. The time
his name is Hal now.
The timeline doesn't work on that though, does it?
It could work. I mean, I don't know, man. Like he at the like two seasons ago, he was like a street kid who was like maybe a teenager. So at this point, we're a few years past those seasons. He could be a 21-year-old. The timeline is strained, but I choose to believe it, bro. Sure.
I will need to see the proof, the maths, and the geometry. You know, I need to see the calculus on this one.
We'll see the calculus, but I feel like
present a supercut of your Easter eggs, please.
Yes. But I do think, you know, the killing of the French Canadian by Bobby was something that kind of they hinted at a well, they talked about DNA evidence, like murdering someone is a hassle, especially with DNA evidence. And then shoots him in the head and he rips his shirt off, which kind of implies that, Bobby about to get caught for this murder. And, you know, not to give anything away, but I don't think they ever revisit that at all. It just is something that, I don't know. Did you guys see something symbolic in the ripping of the shirt, or was that?
It felt like they were doing. Felt like they were doing a Pine Barrens in a small way, where it's like, this could come back, or maybe it won't. Who knows?
Right.
I mean, I thought it was part of like that. I think to me, the ripping off the shirt, it's also like he's coming
out
of his
He's got a nice body.
In addition to being extremely sexy,
just pure titillation.
It's also, I think, like, you know, a kind of like a. I'm trying to think of how Hannibal Lecter says it, like pupa chrysalis or whatever, but like, you know, it's like those are just like the words I remember like, you know, it's like
he's becoming a beautiful butterfly.
This is
exactly.
Bobby's great becoming.
He's you know, he just like he killed somebody, he's now like flowering. And he's, and some would say flowering, others might say careening with reckless abandon, you know, but who's to say?
Who's to say? Who's to make that judgment? Not
precisely.
I.
Precisely. So, yeah. But yeah, that's how I viewed the ripping of the shirt. I do think that there's also like a kind of, you know, it's like very... You know, it's a while ago, but like you think back to how his dad went out and... to me, that's just like such a like the kind of, you know, sort of like, you know, son becomes the father kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah, it's
right,
nice.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, it's this is. Yeah. This episode at once is like stuffed with stuff, you know, things that like, you don't need all this external meaning. But
Bobby's dad was the guy who did the hit while he was like wheezing.
Had a lung.
He had an emphysema. He had an oxygen tank, and he had to kill out Mustang Sally because Sally brained a guy, put him in a coma in a parking dispute. I believe it was Newark is where they shot that.
Then that guy was recast as Vito's brother. But you know, that's just a random fact that I
Mustang
know.
Sally.
No, not Mustang Sally, the guy who got brained.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, Vito Spadafore's brother. Not that that matters. This is why I hate trivia. Shouldn't have said anything.
It's good
go
trivia.
On.
That was good. That was a you did a good trivia, man.
I hate
I didn't
myself
know that.
For knowing stuff.
That is good. I like when you like Vito himself is a recycled guy.
I know. He was Gino. And it's another thing I hate myself for.
He was in the pastry
shop. I'm trying to get through this whole podcast without learning a thing. I don't want to know any trivia, and I feel bad that I know a little bit now. But let's talk a little bit about this opening scene, kind of the impetus for the drive up to the lake, which is we rehashed I think it was the last episode of season 5, I'm not sure, or season 4. Tony and Johnny Sack, season 5, you know, they're making some sort of deal to not shoot at each other no more. And then the FBI comes to arrest Johnny, and Tony runs and drops his gun. And then we see it continued where this long-haired kid finds it.
I mean, I love the way The Sopranos handles these sort of, I don't know what you call them, Easter eggs, MacGuffins, what have you. Like, there's the things that you expect to come back to be important at some point later. Like
right.
The Russian guy from the Pine Barrens, like everybody's waiting for that guy to be hiding behind a tree. And
right.
like on the list of things that you think are going to be important later, Tony throwing his pistol in the snow is yeah. so low on the list. Like
the lowest.
I don't know. I never once considered that that would come back into play, but that's the thing that they chose.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It turns out a kid found it and has been using it to shoot cans, and there's hollow point bullets in it. So that is, I guess, a felony or an arrestable crime. And then we cut to Tony and Carm waking up to pounding on the door, and Carm asks the question, is this it? Which is how I felt watching the episode, like, oh, fuck, man, this is it. This is the last season, you know? Mm-hmm. That was part of, like, that heartbreak right. that she was talking about in that article. I'm just like, yeah, man, this
What's
is
gonna
it.
What's going to be the thing?
What's going to be the thing? From this point on in the series, around every corner, you are like, just waiting for something to happen. You're waiting for someone's going to come out of nowhere and shoot somebody. You know, is it going to be a French Canadian guy? Is it going to be fucking some guy, a Russian dude? Who knows? But so yeah, the FBI, or sorry, the
that guy's bandmates sure. should have come back, like the nihilists and Big Lebowski, just a bunch of French Canadians on motorcycles.
Yeah,
and one of them's
unfortunately.
Flea.
Yeah. But yeah, the cops come and arrest Tony, and he has to spend the night in jail, you know, with people taking a shit in front of him.
That was a great shot.
That is a great shot, yeah. We're going to need you to squat over the toilet and take a shit right behind Tony's ear. Yeah, and then we, you know, from that point, you basically learn about this, what's going to be a continuing thread throughout the rest of the season, which is like, there's this gun charge that is so old, it shouldn't matter. And they end up dropping all the charges, but then we do find out that it's going to be tied into this RICO case, which, I mean, I at the point at which I'm no lawyer, but at the point at which you've got enough to go to trial on a RICO case, a guy having a gun seems like the weakest bit of evidence. You know what I mean? I just the fact that they were going to tie that into the RICO case didn't. I don't know. For me, it was just like it seemed like a useless plot point. But
are you sure
I guess
you're not a lawyer? Because that was like,
listen, motherfucker.
I'm impressed.
I mean,
I'm
look,
impressed
he,
with myself.
The kid picked up the gun, and then they made a big deal about what kind of bullets were in it, as if the kid didn't like reload it and
well,
shoot
right.
it
That's
around
the whole thing.
A bunch
is
of times.
Like if it's
then.
From 2 years ago, I mean, you know, I'm no lawyer, but if the gun is from 2 years ago, then at any point, guy could put hollow point bullet in gun. And again, never went to law school, Noah. So I'm just letting you know that in case you were thinking you needed to hire me for
legal advice.
All I
know is that if I'm ever in a jam, I know who I am.
Yeah.
Absolutely calling.
Look, I'm just a simple podcaster. I may not know much about hollow point bullets and how they work.
I mean, it is, but the RICO thing is like, it's a nice sort of Damocles to set up. And it's
sure.
also like, you know, even if this doesn't pass Matt's legal realist mustard, mm-hmm. It does like do set up like quite well, you know, both like, you know, in vibing with like the real historical precedent
sure.
that like they're, you know, like the federal government is getting ready to take down, you know, seriously or the prosecutors are getting ready quite seriously to go after Tony Soprano, and they're
right.
going to use whatever justification they can as a
sure.
pretext. They're focused yeah. on the long game.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Which is fine. You know, doesn't pass the smell test for me. But hey, who am I? Just the leading Sopranos Ologist. All right. So one of my favorite moments that happens in the brief but wonderful AJ storyline is on the way to, I guess on the way to court to for Tony's arraignment. AJ was supposed to grab a suit out of the closet and ends up grabbing a suit, some pants out of the hamper. You don't see this, but they have this this great little exchange in which I have a clip.
Oh, God damn it, AJ. There is tomato sauce all over these pants. AJ, I asked for the brown suit from the dry cleaning bag.
Well, the light didn't go on in your closet.
Stop it, will you please?
AJ, I relate to AJ. Unlike you, Noah, who relates more to Tony, I relate to AJ in that, like, if I have an excuse, I'm going to use it. Even if I make it, like, if the light didn't go on your closet, it's just like, boom. Yeah. How are you going to fight against that
case
logic?
Closed.
Mom, you know? Like, shit like that is why I love AJ, because he will not take responsibility for a thing. Instead, he's just like, well, the problem is the faulty wiring in your closet. So take that to court, motherfucker. God bless him.
Your
I
Honor,
love it.
Should my client really be expected to see tomato sauce stains in the dark? I don't think so.
Now I'm just a simple country tomato sauce expert, but... In the dark, one cannot see brown spots on brown pants. Yeah, so I do love that that Tony was probably arraigned in dirty pants because of his dipshit son, who is too tired to get the right suit, but also thinks he can be a stepdad to Blanca's kid. And we'll see in the rest of the season how that works out. But another wonderful part of AJ's storyline is him getting a call from Carmella and lying to her about being at work currently.
It's supposed to rain down there, so make sure that all the cellar windows are closed.
Okay.
And make sure you check the one by Dad's wine rack.
Okay.
Easy, big fella.
That jacuzzi's bitchy.
Who is that?
It's Fran, the waitress. All right, look, we're really busy down here.
You're at work?
Yes. All right, I'm at the pizzeria.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
The jacuzzi in the tub's fantastic.
Don't let us forget to wash the sheets, okay?
Ugh, god damn. There's just something particularly gross about
detail.
Imagine.
Just, what I loved. I'm very charmed.
Oh,
personally.
Yeah.
He wants to be a parent, and he's still at the age when mom and dad are gone means I get to fuck on their bed is still.
Yeah. And we got to make sure to wash the sheets is just... That's just a level of disgusting that, you know, we should all be so lucky to someday have a wonderful child who grows up to be a fine boy who fucks in our bed and leaves semen stains slash.
Well, I mean, to his credit, stains. The point is that he doesn't want to leave the semen stains.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. To his credit, he wants to be a
gentleman. And to his credit, like, you know, I mean, listen, we're recording this on International Women's Day. He wants to show a woman a good time. He doesn't want to screw
that's right.
In. Like, I don't remember what bed he has at this point in the series. It wouldn't be past him to still have, like, a race car bed, a thing of that nature.
Yeah, and, you know, exactly. A Slipknot theme bed.
Yeah, precisely, you know, and he wants to, you know.
Yeah, he's,
you know,
refined now.
Is,
he has a kid.
Exactly. You know, he's got to have sex in the man bed. And like a man, he's got to wash the sheets before his parents come home because they also sleep in that bed.
Exactly. Oh, boy. And then he lets in a bunch of people for a party that he's throwing at, you know, at their fucking North Caldwell mansion. Yeah, so they go up to the lake, and we get into the entire cabin origin story, which I thought was particularly interesting. And it's another, like, detail that I missed, you know, in my initial viewings of it, is, like, Bobby is telling Carmella and Tony about the origin story of the cabin. His father... you know, has ties to Montreal because their grandfather immigrated illegally through Canada. And he mentions anti-government or something like that. To which I could only imagine that Bobby Bacala's grandfather was a Italian anarchist, but how can I know? I don't know for sure, but that is my second theory of the episode.
It's Bacco and Vanzetti. He's
exactly.
One of them.
Yeah, Bacala and Vanzetti. But yeah, and then they have an amazing line that happens right at the end of this, which I have a small clip of.
My pop bought this place because it was close to Canada. His father, my grandpa, come into the country originally through Montreal, illegally.
No kidding. You wasn't Ellis Island, your grandfather?
Nah, got mixed up in some shenanigans on the other side. Anti-government or something. Had a police record. They ought to build a wall now, though. I'm telling you.
Amen.
Oh, yes.
Seamless, but- yeah.
The idea of Bobby and Carmela, you know, it's like all these characters you forget because it's 2007, you know, like what the immigration debate was at the time. So it just sounds like a recent political take. But you forget that people have been trying to build a wall or using that as their mantra for
although,
the longest
I don't know,
time.
Like part of me does think, though, now, like, you know, it's one of those things where it's like at the time I would have treated that like a joke. Mm-hmm. You know, like it was a tossed off, like, you know, it's like like they were being hyperbolic, although it is obviously betraying their real like sentiments.
Right.
And then like literally, but you know, there was the whole, I don't know if you know about the whole build the wall thing and Trump, but there was that, which is a fairly,
I've heard about it.
Yeah. So just that sort of, yeah, it, that struck me.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it is absolutely consistent with the characters. I mean, the types of people, you know, especially, I mean, you know, we're talking about Italian-Americans or any, like, now white immigrant group all believing that despite the fact that, like, Bobby's grandfather was literally an illegal immigrant, they're like, yeah, well, we should build a wall because there's too many, you know, we don't want to put too many of those guys in here taking all the jobs. So it works. And then we get to the wonderful Monopoly scene.
Tony's birthday. They're having a good time.
Yeah.
Everybody, it starts off, Carmel and Janice are like, hey, why don't we open this bottle of wine? And then, Bobby's like, why don't we open this grappa? And then it's like the grappa's out. And then pretty soon they're having old family arguments at the Monopoly table.
Yeah, yeah. The, you know and what they say, liquor before grappa. Never.
And then they have
you might have to fight your papa.
Cutting. Yeah. They, because basically, I forget what Jana says about Tony. What is it that she says that makes him then call her a slut?
It's, yeah.
He was busting her ball. Or no, he brought up the fact that she recorded him fighting with his other sister,
right,
and used it to like hold it against him, which apparently was a big no-no because they're a mafia family, and she used a wire on them.
Yeah, she used the wire.
Yeah,
exactly.
And then
they talk about the time that Janice fed Tony a milk bone,
right? Yeah.
which he also didn't appreciate. Which kind of actually ties into what you were saying, Noah, kind of about the, you know, like Janice. Janice is almost like Janice is to Tony as Tony is to Bobby, like when he was a kid. You know what I mean? Like he would pretty much do anything that Janice said, like because he really did admire her. You know, it was a cool older sister type. And the fact that, you know, I think he unknowingly ate the milk bone, but still it was for him not to question it. It's a,
well,
it's a very,
and also
Tony-Bobby,
like,
relation.
They're like, you know, they're just like both so deformed by their parents, like,
yes,
I mean, like, so, you know, they're both like these just like profoundly maladjusted people who literally cannot stop sniping at each other.
Yes,
like they cannot like set aside their bullshit. They have the most pliant, agreeable spouses in the world.
Yes,
like, straight up. And they cannot like settle their bullshit because,
yeah,
you know, they're both like, you know, psychos. And
they're psychos. They got the psycho gene. They're both
exactly precise. They like, you know, it's like, you know, they're total fucking psychos. And then yeah. you know, like, and then obviously, you know, what we learn is that it turns out there's like a little bit of psycho in all of them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, both Tony and Janice are channeling Livia the whole episode in different ways. You know, you have Janice channeling it through like just her constant like mealy-mouthed insults, like the way that she's able to like jab at people and be like, what did I do, what did I say? And Tony's like absolute self-pitying throughout this episode is like, they're both channeling Livia in different ways. But yeah, Bobby is someone who, I think he put it perfectly when he says, "You Sopranos, you go too far," because he can't handle the level of insults.
He can't handle regular ball busting in a family. Can't. Yeah,
yeah. It's for the same reason why you're like, yeah, of course he's also never killed a guy. Like this guy is he's a softie at the end of the day.
I like that when they do when she wins second prize at a beauty contest, and it's like, all right, don't say anything, Tony. And then there's just a few beats where you're waiting. You're like, oh, what is he?
What's it gonna be?
What's it gonna be? And and then when it comes, it really he totally delivers.
Boardwalk, I own it.
Yeah, you blow guys under it.
I roll again. Okay. Second prize in a beauty contest. Collect $10. Go ahead. Make your stupid joke.
I got nothing to say.
Think I'll buy a railroad.
A German shepherd shaved asshole won first prize.
Legitimately good joke. Yeah. Legitimately funny. Because as you're waiting for it, you're like, well, what could he possibly say?
It's not going to be that clever. And it wasn't that clever, but like just the level of specificity and the mental image he painted. Like he added just enough detail, and it really he made it sing. And
it's a great one. I couldn't have in no world would I have been able to top that, especially with her preempting it. But yeah, Bobby does not like it, and the clip continues.
What about my wife?
You married her.
She's my home. No more talking like that.
It's okay, Bobby.
Stay out of this. Sopranos. You go too far.
All right, you know, Jan, he's right. I'm sorry. I crossed the line. I apologize. Won't happen again.
Maybe he's gonna be a bigger man and not and just let it drop there.
I'm sure it'll be fine. Yeah. I'm sure he meant the apology.
He can't. He will let them have the last word. Surely.
Mm-hmm.
Under the boardwalk, with his schlong and change my house. Under the
boardwalk,
and
with
yeah,
his schlong and change my house.
And again, like this, like playing clips of the show on the podcast. Not only do they not lose anything, like they almost gain something because you really realize why the Foley guy is called
they're working
because
overtime.
The yes. soundscape in The Sopranos is just fantastic.
It's a great fight, and unfortunately for Tony, it leads to him being beat up, and then
he looked like he was gonna win for a while there. I feel like he got a lot of good licks in.
If it wasn't for that fucking throw rug,
yeah, he's not wrong. Hey.
Oh man, just the childish way that he continues to bring up the fact that he was at a disadvantage after he lost the fight. It's
I mean, you can't let somebody with as low a center of gravity as Bobby have top position, and I think that is the, you know, that's my takeaway.
That's
the
big
the
lesson.
Yeah.
Yes, the lesson is that you shouldn't be topped by Bobby Bacala.
That's right.
Oh man. And so Tony spends the rest of the episode stewing, like sitting in self-pity, and, you know, yeah, tells Bobby that he would have won a few years ago and called it a sucker punch, which to which Bobby mentions, like, so it wasn't fair and square. What was it? Make up your mind. Which I like this spicy version of Bobby where he still has enough pride to be like, last night you said I won fair and square and now you're not saying it. So just like make a decision and I'll go with whatever you say, which is he's found his, you know, he found his angle, which to be a little bit spicy. So I appreciate that.
The one thing I do question is I don't feel like any of them would have had very good memories of that fight because everybody's clearly shit-faced when that fight happened, and they all seem to have like perfect recall of everything that went down, and I feel like the memories would be fuzzier.
I don't know, man. I feel like, yeah, maybe. I don't know. I remember every single embarrassing thing I ever did while drunk and or high, so I don't know. I feel like I'd remember getting my ass kicked in front of my wife.
Listen, Vince, I know you're not a memory specialist.
Uh-huh.
But yeah. I'm impressed.
Yeah, I mean, you know, here we wear a lot of hats on this podcast, okay? Lawyer, memory specialist, sauce guy, chef, Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. All right. So, yeah, then we get to the French Canadians, the osteoporosis pills. I'll give you a discount if you could whack my sister's ex-husband, who is, according to my notes, a drummer.
Yeah, all right, maybe.
And a possible Harpo, although some disagree. And then Bobby has to murder the poor French Canadian.
Bobby has to become a cool guy.
Yeah, finally the show is it like that. I love that's him as a butterfly. He's cool. Says like,
I mean I do
the world's best Sopranos audience members. Like, hell yeah!
There is definitely like another like there's a cut of this that they don't want you to know about where mm-hmm. it's the song from Manhunter. Like as strong as I am or whatever. Yeah. And it's just like Bobby like ripping off that shirt in like slow motion and like, you know, fully becoming himself and then putting a stocking over his head and all that.
Hey, they call me the dragon. I am the dragon. But you call me insane. You are privy to a great becoming, but you recognize nothing. Anyways, yeah. So, yeah, he comes home instead, not to the Manhunter theme, but instead to this magic moment playing the classic song by, I don't know, Temptations? Drifters? Pretenders. Benny King? Pretender? Who knows? It's just one of those songs that I feel like I literally don't know who does it. I assume it's the Temptations or the Drifters. And it would be the second Drifters reference because they also did Under the Boardwalk. He goes, he hugs his kids, and we fade out, fade to black, and that's the episode.
There's one thing missing, though, which is just the...
Yes, that the is boat. The next segment in which I ask, is there anything that I missed?
The boat.
Oh, yes. The one so where they're sitting in the boat?
Yeah, I mean, this is actually probably like a good segment just to put at the end anyway, because it's like the most obviously suggestive, and in my opinion, anyway. And I also think that like it's the most interesting one because it's the first time, like, The Sopranos is very good at like making a lot of like, you know, like weaving like freighted decisions into the plot where you're not actually speaking the dynamics into existence, which is, you know, part of why you have the therapy scenes, because that's where that happens. But then right here in this moment, you get Bobby and Tony, you know, fishing on the lake, like, you know, talking, and they're talking, you know, and they're talking, and Bobby is telling, you know, Tony about how he's never killed anybody and so on.
Right.
And they're talking about death. And Bobby asks, you know, like, you know, or they like, do you even think it's, I think he asks, like, do you ever see, I don't, do you think you even see
it's
it
a
coming?
Statement.
He it's says, a statement. Yeah.
You probably don't even hear it when it happens, right?
There's your friend in there on the wall.
And when he says, ask your friend in there on the wall, that's, he's pointing out like a deer, a stuffed
deer.
Yeah,
yeah, it's like a deer, yeah, like a thing that like Bobby had hunted him out on the wall. I mean, yeah. It's very, it doesn't have to say too much, but it says a lot. I mean, it's not filled with too much, but it says a lot, I think.
Yeah, no, and it is them sitting around having this incredibly morbid conversation about what comes next between, the business, and then also what happens, because he said something along the lines of, like, 70% of the time you're either, in jail or dead. And Bobby's trying to make the idea of getting shot to death sound like, well, listen, you don't even know when it happens. It'll just one day happen, which is a line that's often cited when people talk about the infamous ending of the series, where they assume, did Tony die? He didn't hear it when it happens, so maybe that's what happened.
But it's like, one of the the nice things about The Sopranos is that, like, it's just like you can almost like diagram it, hits beats so perfectly across the series that, like, to my mind, like, I'll leave it to the listener to decide what just how choose your own adventure they want to be with that they think the ending means. But there is this, like, very, like the what you feel the sense of in this season is like the barrier between, their, like, materially satisfied and comfortable home life and this violent thing that is what sustains it. Like, that's, it just starts to come off the rails, and it escalates and it permutates in this very weird thing. But, like, to me, there's a very, you can see, like, the cracks in the edifice are all sort of revealing themselves, like, internally. In hearth, in home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he literally has got a little home stuck on the side of his face.
I think it's covered in blood. I said hearth, but I think it's pronounced hearth.
Oh, we mispronounce things all the time on this show, and we stick with it forever because of it. That's what you got
to
do.
To Hearth Castle in seventh grade. Mm-hmm. It's a good field trip.
My penis hearths. Okay. do you Seamless. Guys have thank you
professional
do you, guys, do you have a favorite scene or a least favorite scene or scene we didn't talk about? We talked about the scenes we didn't talk about. Vince,
yeah, so again, favorite, like, least favorite? I'm bringing some personal stuff to the table here. Like, I really like to me, this episode is very much about Italian dysfunction, and one of my favorite just small moments that we didn't talk about is Carm trying to change the subject by bringing up, like, a little kid drowning in a pool. And when she
that's
says,
not Carm bringing up that subject, that is actually Tony bringing that up.
Yeah, but then Carm, I think, adds the detail, like, he's in a padded wheelchair, and just like the phrase padded wheel, like, he's in a wheelchair, but he's also, like, insane now. It's a padded room, but made out of a wheelchair. Like, I had to stop because I was laughing so hard at the padded wheelchair line. It's just so perfect.
It is an amazing moment. It's very much the, I feel, Tony doing the Livia thing, where, like, Livia would just randomly bring up, like, did you hear about the new dead kids this week? Like, she always seems to find dead kid stories.
I feel like that's probably a Jewish thing too, but it's very Italian. Oh, yeah. To just,
well,
like, bring,
I mean,
up,
I think
bring
that's
up the
just
most
a
dep- morbid
that's just a
thing.
Depressed person thing.
Yeah.
That, and that's what Livia and Tony have in common. Like, that's, like, his mark of Cain that he got from his mom or whatever the fuck. Like, this depression, again, because the thing that he got from his dad is the psychopathic killing streak that enables material splendor, and from mom he got, like, depression and self-sabotage and external intrafamilial sabotage and social sabotage
Just being vindictive. The vindictiveness is specifically a Livia trait, and it's something that, like, Livia says, or sorry, Carmela says outright when Janice is low-key, like, implying that Tony is a vindictive person. When in the scene where Tony takes Bobby out for this, like, this whatever they're going to do. They pretend it's golfing. You see the look in the face of both Janice and Bobby, and it's immediately followed up with that scene where basically Janice is implying that Tony lies in wait, lies in wait for before striking, which says to me that she's not 100% sure that Tony isn't about to murder Bobby because of the fight. And without talking about it, Carmella is saying, I'm 100% sure that Tony's not about to murder Bobby. That's what I think is going on. But that's just me.
Sure.
And I'm no lawyer.
Yes.
My favorite scene is this one.
Love hurts. Love scars. Love wounds. And more.
I feel like that is the alternate title of the episode is Love Hurts.
Mm-hmm.
It just it makes sense to me.
Yeah. My favorite scene is just the one at Tierney's. It's the, I got to go with the hometown interior shot.
Yeah.
And also recently, Emma Roberts was photographed having a drink there with somebody, I forget, whoever she was photographed with, because she's in the tabloids, but somebody.
Which one's Emma Roberts?
Eric
Julia's
Roberts'
daughter.
Is,
yeah, or Eric's. Or,
Eric
yeah.
Roberts'
no, Eric's
daughter.
Right, yeah.
And
this
Julia
is,
Roberts' is.
Niece.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. I didn't know there was a whole Roberts. I forgot Eric Roberts existed until this moment.
That is wow. Insane to me.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't know. I was like, there's an Eric? Oh, yeah, Julia's.
You know, maybe
brother.
You should talk to Vince. He's a memory specialist.
He knows
true.
A thing or two
yeah,
about
we can
members
work it out.
Stuff.
We can.
Yeah.
In case you forgot.
I did. If I had to give this episode a letter grade, and I do, because I've set that as a standard for this episode. I think I love it. So I'm giving it a solid B+. Vince, what would you give this episode?
Yeah, I think I have to agree with Noah that this is one of the, maybe arguably one of the best of the series. Therefore, I give it a solid B+.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Noah, what would you give this episode?
I agree with myself as well, and I'm going to go with a B+.
That's fair. B+ is all around. A B+ episode of The Sopranos and another A+ episode of Pod Yourself a Gun. Noah Colwin, thank you so much for coming on the pod and talking Sopranos with us.
Thank you for having me on. And for people who want to know more about the next season of Blowback, Brendan made a trailer that's on his Twitter and on our Twitter. And there are going to be more details coming soon at www.blowback.show. And it'll be coming out this summer. And
so excited.
Stay tuned for, how it'll be released and more details. All will be revealed.
Very
Brendan,
excited.
Brendan, I'm saying that now, but I think there's probably a good chance that Brendan said that when he came on here. So I'm just going to reaffirm it in that case.
Yeah. Well, he couldn't get into detail about what it was going to be about, and then the day after he recorded the podcast, I saw the trailer, and it was about North Korea. Is that still the case?
It's the three letters of detail that I can supply, and you can interpret them however you want.
Sure.
The Korean War.
Yeah, the Korean War. Right. Okay. I'm very excited to learn about the Korean War.
Well, good. All
I know about the Korean War is that's the war that Don Draper fought in Mad Men. Changed his, he used to be Adam Whitman. Anyways, this is another show.
I was going to say, you guys, you guys should do Pod Men next.
Yeah.
I was thinking about it.
Pod yourself some men.
That sounds good, man.
Yeah, my Friday night.
Hell yeah.
All right.
So check out Noah Colwin, Brendan James on the marvelous history podcast. Do you guys call it a history podcast? That's what I would
maybe history, it. Political history, if we need to, if some people need to be handheld into that kind of thing. But
it's
audio content.
It's audio content.
It's snackable, it's portable, potable.
Mm-hmm.
No filter needed.
And it's got some Sopranos clips in it. So
it does. Yeah,
that'll,
it does.
That'll keep a lot of these Sopranos listeners interested.
Yes, you know, it is a rich vein.
Yeah. So check it out
thank
wherever
you,
you get your
me.
Podcasts.
Thank
and
you.
Thank you, Noah Colwin.
Thank you.
Patreon.com/Frotcast for all of the bonus episodes of the Frotcast, in which Vince and I talk about all sorts of stuff, movies, fucking other things. And the $8 tier gets you a shout out. Vince, it is a brand new season. And because we took that small break, we have a lot of $8 tier people. So, you know, we're going to be doing it over time. So we're doing 10 right now. All right. Are you ready to do 10 names?
Yeah, I got my nickname shoes on.
Okay. All right. They're shoes now.
Yeah,
right.
They're shoes, gloves.
Okay.
Welding mask.
So the first is Tucker Batson.
Oh, he's the Bat's son? Now we're going to call... we're gonna call this guy Twilight because he's our Robert Pattinson's son. He's the Batman now. This guy's he's Twilight. Look,
I got it.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah.
Next is Dennis Brezhnev.
We call this guy the Slav.
I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis the Slav. Okay. After that, we got Nick Nunez.
We call him
Nunez.
Nick the Noon.
Nick the Noon?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I don't know. You could...
Nicky the Noon.
Nicky
he's always
Noon.
Coming around, around 12
o'clock.
He's always
coming at 12 on the dot. Yeah. Next, we have Mads Larsen.
We call this guy Happy.
Oh, I like that. That's good. The contrast. Mads Happy Larsen. All right. Next is Michael Heisler.
Michael Heisler. More like Michael Eisner. We call this guy Disneyland.
I was positive you were going to say more like Michael Gebeisner. All right, Disneyland's good. Next is Alvaro Lacayo.
Lacayo. Al. Loco Al. We call this guy Crazy Al.
Crazy Al. Mm-hmm. Alvaro. Crazy Al. Lacayo. Next is Drew Glover.
Yeah, we call Drew Glover. More like Danny Glover. This guy's getting too old for this shit. We call him the Lethal Weapon.
Oh, damn, that worked. Yeah, that's like a really good one.
Mm-hmm.
Next is Mark Silverstein.
Mark Silverstein. More like...
Call this guy the Jew.
More like... Mark, he's a Shell, Jew. We call this guy where the... We call this guy the Giving Tree.
The Giving Tree. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, because he's giving us money. Ugh, that was almost as good as the last one, really.
You're on a roll. Next is Eric, just Eric.
Eric, just Eric. Like old E from Entourage. We call this guy Pussy Posse.
All right, Pussy Posse.
That guy was, a lot of people don't remember that guy.
He was part of the Pussy Posse.
Yeah, he was. Him and, what was that, Ethan Suple.
Who
is it
that?
Ethan
I don't I don't even know that guy. That's a new guy to me.
He's a big guy. He's the fat guy from American History X. Except he's not fat anymore. He's pretty muscular now.
He was in the Pussy Posse?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Him?
There's a lot
e
of weird videos,
Entourage.
I bet. Like home videos of him having sex with people from back in the day.
That guy who was dating Lauren Ambrose in 6 Feet Under. I forget that guy's name.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck.
Yeah.
And Leo, famously.
Yeah, well, obviously. That he was the source of the pussy.
Yeah, he was the one who got all the pussy in a posse.
But it was so much they needed a posse man. To lasso it all.
Yeah, mm-hmm. All right. Two more. Connor Devlin.
Connor Devlin, more like Connor Heaven. Mm-hmm.
We call this guy Jesus Christ. No, you would name him.
We call this guy the Imp.
The Imp?
Yeah, one of those little devil guys with the little pitchfork. That's what they do, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like
sure.
That.
And finally, Mark Warden.
The Warden. Yeah, we call this guy... What do we call this guy?
The Warden's too easy.
Yeah, he's already the Warden. We call this guy Hard Time.
Hard Time.
That's right.
I like it, man. Mm-hmm. So those are all of the $8 shout out patrons mm-hmm. this week. We have a bunch more for next week. And hey, if you didn't hear your name, tough it's shit. Coming.
Oh, yeah. And, no, that's what I meant.
Yeah, that's it'll happen. And hey, if you still don't hear your name after a while,
tough
feel
shit.
Free to,
oh, yeah. No.
Tough shit, but also feel free to message me. yeah, patreon.com/broadcast or email for all your questions, comments, and concerns. broadcast@gmail.com. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
Alrighty, everybody. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, don't stop believing.
What's up, bitch? My name is L.A. Matt. I'm flapping, flapping, flapping in the ass with that guy. Gonna punch a bitch in the throat. You know? Bob Saget fell. He hit his head. It was real sad, but now he's dead. He's in heaven looking down at all of us like, hey, guys, I make jokes that are gross, but I'm having a lot of... I don't know, man. I'm tired. I can't believe it's the last season. That's too bad. Sup, bitch, eat dicks, fuck chicks, hey, licking clits, eat shit, fuck shit. Fuck, fuck, fuckity, fuck.
By Vin the Boner.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.